This is football. I'm Kevin Clark. Draft Hot Takes with Tom Fornelli in just a second. Tom's one of my guys. This was great. He had some phenomenal takes. It's like Jim Rome. Phenomenal takes. Stephon Diggs traded on Wednesday. Thank God. We were initially going to record this episode before the trade, and then we wouldn't have gotten anything from it. Instead, we do it a day later, and I get to sound off on this. So Brandon Bean was on this show on Monday. You guys heard it. And I asked him, and this was, I did not know they were going to trade Stephon Diggs, 4 days after the interview? But there were a couple hints. Number one, he said that he wished he drafted Puka Nacua. Number two is that I had read him the Joe Burrow quote, which I think is instructive, where he said, Burrow said that the window for a championship is as long as he's there, which I think is the quote for the modern age. If you have a franchise quarterback, the window is open. And Bean agreed and said, the window's open because we're building around the quarterback. And I generally agree. I do not think the Stephon Diggs trade is the difference between the Bills being a Super Bowl contender and not. I think the bigger issue is some of the other guys they've lost, the offensive line, retooling that, some of the defensive guys. Like, they had to take their medicine with the salary cap. This happens sometimes. I do not believe the Bills can win this Super Bowl next year. But I also think we kind of gave up when the midseason and Josh Allen did it. Like, the threshold, I asked him about this a couple weeks ago, because I said, I wonder this aloud on my show. And I said, what would have to happen with the Chiefs where they wouldn't be able to win the Super Bowl next year, or even be the favorite, like in the offseason? If Kelce and Chris Jones retired, or I'm sorry, if Kelce retired and Chris Jones left, would I still say they're the Super Bowl favorite, as an example? And I actually had somebody who knows things say, actually, Chris Jones, if you take Chris Jones out, they should not be the favorite anymore because of just how Spags runs his defense. Anyway, that doesn't matter. They're running it back. It's fine. But with the Bills, what's the threshold for them to not be a Super Bowl contender? I think with Josh Allen, the floor is really high. I think you need to keep him upright. They need to give him time. But I don't necessarily think that skill players on the outside are that big a part of the equation. I think they can get away without Stephon Diggs. They paid a lot of money, $31 million in dead cap, which, by the way, is overrated because you're going to pay him a bunch of money if he was on the roster anyway. And you're saving cash, which is important to NFL teams. But you're paying a lot of money for him not to be there, which means they really didn't want him on the roster. They really did not want him on the roster, which tells you something. So I guess I know this is kind of a lukewarm take. My opinion of the Bills actually did not change particularly much from Monday until today. I think they probably had the same ceiling, same floor. They're not among my tier one favorites right now, but Josh Allen is the window. Josh Allen is the window, and I don't think Stephon Diggs was going to have much to do with it. He faded pretty much statistically from September to December every single year. He was bad in the playoffs last year. I don't know what that is. That could be a coincidence. That could be anything. Small sample size, obviously. But I just don't. I think there's going to always be. The one thing I've changed my mind on the last couple of years is always a reflex when a team trades away a really good player to say the team that lost a really good player lost the trade. And I don't necessarily think that's true. Why are they trading the guy away? I don't think. I say this about quarterbacks, and I still think it's true, is that no team has ever traded away a quarterback they wanted to keep. And it's usually, there are exceptions with non-quarterbacks, but it's usually still true. The franchise tag, the way contracts work in the NFL, it keeps players that teams want in the building. So the Bills thought that trading Stephon Diggs and not having him on the roster was more valuable than $31 million in dead cap. You didn't get a huge return from him. Like, at some point, you have to say there's probably a reason that they just didn't want him there. On the flip side, Houston, exactly what you want them to do. They accelerated the timeline last year with the Will Anderson trade. And this is so important. Like, okay, there's some teams that get a rookie quarterback on the deal and they say, all right, we're going to figure out later what's going on, or we're going to make a bunch of excuses on why we can't compete. No, Houston said, we're going to get Will Anderson and CJ Stroud in the same draft. We're going to bet big on them. They were both excellent, obviously, in their rookie years. They go out and they immediately get a star after year one. It's not even just about the rookie contract. It's about aggression and just saying, we want this to happen now. That is so unbelievably valuable. So I love this. Honestly, it's a win-win. It's a win-win. And I think that the Bills had to take a reset. They had to take their medicine. They had to do basically just toggle the on-off switch a little bit with that cap, with that franchise. Houston gets to accelerate their timeline even more. I think this is going to be fine. All right, here's Tom. Reminder, 5-star reviews helps us, helps everybody. Really enjoy it. Really appreciate the community we've built here. Tap that 5-star on Spotify and Apple. I'll see you next week. Here's Tom Fornelli. All right, Tom Fornelli, CBS Sports Cover 3 podcast, Cover 3. One of my favorite non-NFL podcasts, Tom Fornelli, one of my favorite people in media. I will say, Tom, I do say very often that someone is a favorite person in media. And I was somebody the other day, and I was like, maybe I say it too much. And I was like, well, no, I have my own show. I can invite whoever I want. It's actually a problem if I don't invite one of my favorite people in media. I have like I overpromote people. Like I do this in my personal life too, where I'll just be like, oh, so-and-so is one of my best friends. And then if you just tally everybody up, you get like 75 best friends.
That's a lot of best friends. I'm thrilled to be one of them, but I have found like,
you're one of my favorite people in media. You're not one of my best friends.
Oh.
Two separate buckets. I'm sorry. I didn't want to I can't over-promote you.
Wow.
That's
an awkward way to start the show. I don't know. I feel like there's going to be a cloud hanging over me this entire time. It's like, well, he likes me, but only for what I do, not who I am. So no, that's true. Know. We're gonna see how this goes.
I'm like Belichick. I'm just using you as far as you can get me in the professional sense, and then I will cut you a year too soon instead of a year too late in true Belichick fashion.
Don't worry, I'm Robert Kraft. In 20 years, I will release a documentary that blames you for murders that you had nothing to do with.
All right. So peek behind the curtain. We've tried to do this. We've intro 4 different times. And each time there's been some sort of internet problem over two days. And it's funny because I'm doing a huge narrative podcast. I don't know what we would call it. A huge epic podcast, actually a Spotify podcast. And it's taken like 5 days to record. And so that's been my experience. And so now the fact that we've tried to record over 2 days is sort of like that. Maybe that's just the new model. It's just multi-day podcasts.
We're going to do the most inefficient production possible. That's the new market inefficiency, is to be inefficient.
Is to just show up for 5 minutes, get dressed, get all the producers on the line, and then don't actually do anything. Yeah. I love that. All right, so we're doing your hot takes episode. Couple things about it. Number one is, so yesterday when we started this, you had not seen, and this is not a hot take, this is about how badly we need the draft to come. You had not seen Michael Penix's mirror plays. And let me set this up for the audience if you haven't seen it. So Jordan Schultz put up a photo that Michael Penix's team took of Michael Penix's apartment. I would have put this photo up. This is not about whether or not they should have put the photo up. I don't think the photo should exist. So basically what it is it's like Penix writing basic formations on the mirror of his apartment building. And there's a couple flaws here. Number one is like, so it's presented as like he's got these plays. Well, there's no plays. It's just like trips right, which is just, you could find that in Madden. And then the other part of it is, so it was used to be like the aggregators took it and were like, he is locked in. This guy loves football. But I'm sure that's true. But then there are other people who know ball and they were like, what offense was he learning right now? Like what? And also that's not even an offense, it's just formation. So April 3rd, when the photo went up, we need the draft to come now. Goodell should have seen the Michael Penix mirror photo and moved everything up, gotten everybody to Detroit immediately.
I mean, there have certainly been worse athlete mirror photos that have been leaked on the media before. I don't think that this is, it is an interesting one. It's like, look at this quarterback. He likes football. That tells me everything I need to know about him as a prospect. I don't see Caleb Williams drawing plays on his fingernails. No, he needs to be doing it on his mirror. That's how I'll know he really cares. He likes football. Maybe he's just doing it for decoration. Like, you know, like maybe wallpaper has patterns. Yeah. Maybe that's the pattern he prefers. Trips right all over the walls.
Wow. Or, I mean, it is a red flag if he needed to be reminded of trips right. It is. I'll just throw that out there. If he's like, trips right is what now?
What was that movie, is Memento, from way back in the day?
Yeah.
It's like Michael Penix's Memento. He's trying to remember everything, so he just writes it on the wall so that way he doesn't forget. He's like, I'm a quarterback. I have to go to practice today.
We're going to put three receivers to the right.
They'll all be in the NFL one day, too.
They'll all be in the NFL. Quickly, so you're in Illinois. How's the weather, by the way? I got bumped. Is there a Cubs doubleheader today?
No, they played last night.
What?
Yeah.
I got rearranged on Chicago radio because they were like, it's probably going to be a doubleheader tomorrow. So we're probably not going to have a radio show. And now I'm sitting here like an idiot. I've been telling everybody, including you, there's going to be a Cubs doubleheader. I feel like I didn't send information, and they freaking played.
They played. It was cold. It was wet, and it was kind of snowy, but they played. So, you know,
baseball weather.
It is here for sure in April.
Mm-hmm. Let's go. I might go to a Yankee game in the next 6 months. Hey, all right. So let's do Caleb Williams real quick. You're in Illinois, as I said. Expectations, like everybody's like, well, the Bears have shown no ability to develop a quarterback. Well, that's why you draft Caleb Williams, is because you've shown no ability to develop a quarterback. So the best thing to do is just keep drafting a quarterback until one of them is like, actually, I don't need development. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on the franchise changing potential of Caleb Williams?
It's an exciting prospect because I do think that when you look at this quarterback class, I think it's a good class overall, particularly when you compare it to maybe what's coming next year. I don't think it is an incredible class, but when I look at these guys, I do think Caleb Williams is one of the better quarterback prospects that we have seen coming out of college in a while. Now, that does not mean he is going to come in the NFL and he's going to tear things apart and he's going to be an all-time great. But I am also surprised by the lack of overall buzz in this city about it, because the Chicago Bears are huge in Chicago for obvious reasons. The NFL is huge everywhere, but you get to this city where, you know, we have two baseball teams, so that kind of divides it. The Blackhawks and the Bulls get you through the winter, but like the Bears are the thing that everybody talks about all year round. So I think that they've got the number one pick. They're going to be drafting the quote-unquote generational quarterback prospect, and there's still people that are kind of upset that Justin Fields got traded, who think that Justin Fields was screwed over. And you know what? He was. Like, Justin Fields was not in a great situation. He came in with a front office that was basically kind of heaving a Hail Mary to try to save their jobs by getting him. And I was thrilled when they did it because I loved Fields coming out of Ohio State. But it didn't work. He got put in a bad situation, a very young team. Coach gets fired after 1 year. You bring in a new regime. He's got new offensive coordinators, blah, blah, blah. All this kind of stuff that happens to a lot of quarterbacks when they get to the league. All the stuff the Bears have traditionally done to prove why they can't develop quarterbacks and why they're here taking another one. But the situation Caleb Williams is walking into, I mean, it's been discussed. I don't know if you can come up with a better situation for a number one overall pick at QB. You don't typically step onto a team that was 7-10 last year that will have two all-pro receivers sitting there ready for you to throw to, that has a solid, not spectacular, but solid offensive line, and a defense last year that over the second half of the season was one of the best in the league. So it's a great situation for him. It doesn't mean it's going to work out. It doesn't mean he's going to be great, but of recent years, like when the Jags took Trevor Lawrence, I loved Trevor, but I didn't think they were going to go winning into the playoffs in that first year. I think the Bears, they could get to the playoffs in Caleb's rookie season.
I completely agree. So two things off of that. Number one is that I think part of the muted reaction to having this is having this pick, having this player, knowing what you have, there's a certainty to it. The muted reaction is having your heart broken so many times. And the analogy I've always used is, when you follow recruiting like we do, and Miami, unlike Illinois, gets really good players. And
let's check the recent drafts real quick. Hold on.
No, you guys get the what was Devin Witherspoon like a baseball player? What was his thing?
He had trouble getting into school because he had some academic problems he had to work on. So he couldn't really, you know, he ended up at Illinois and worked out.
Didn't have a lot of offers. But speaking of, like, Miami, the amount of times, like, in 2012, 2013, where I lose my mind over getting one player and be like, this is the culture changer, and then nothing changes. And then the next time, like, 2016, when you get a five-star, you're just like, all right, well, I've already done that. You've already gone through the process. Like, it's only been 3 years since everybody said, I can't believe Justin Fields fell to us. This changes everything. So literally the only people who can come into this with a clean slate are three-year-olds.
Yes. Yeah, I know. It's like I kind of wish I had a kid so that way they can only grow up in an era where the Bears were dominant and had a wonderful quarterback. Because that's definitely what's going to happen. But it is interesting because you're right. Like, I was really into Justin Fields. It didn't work out. I talked myself into Mitch Trubisky when it happened. Like, I
No.
did not want Mitch. I wanted Deshaun Watson in that draft class. And obviously, time passing says, maybe Mitch was the better choice for different reasons. But like, as a Bears fan, you talk yourself into this. Like when they signed Mike Glennon, I was like, that could work. That's a
That could
bridge
work.
that
That
allows
could
Mitch
work.
time to get ready. And
Yeah,
then,
that could
of course,
work.
it never does. So,
Oh.
yeah, fingers crossed it works. Because I got to be honest with you, Kevin. I try to be as neutral as possible as a journalist, but I could really, really go for a good Bears team just for once, just to know what it's like to wake up on Sunday and think your team's going to win on a regular basis. I don't know what that's like. I would love to know that experience.
Good luck, buddy. All right, so we're gonna do draft hot takes. We're gonna start with your Rome Odunze take, which I love. We already did half of this yesterday when we tried to do this the lost episode of This Is Football with Tom Fornelli. You have the floor, Rome Odunze.
Rome Odunze is the best wide receiver in this class. I say that with confidence. I don't say that as an insult to Malik Nabers or to Marvin Harrison, who I believe are also very good wide receivers. I just think Rome Odunze is the most complete as far as what he already is, who he can be, and also his production. Because if you go looking at through his games last year, his worst game, I think, was 5 catches for 65 yards. You know what happened to him in that game, Kevin?
I don't.
Punctured a lung.
Oh, wow.
He punctured his lung and he kept playing and he still caught 5 balls for 65 yards. I think Marvin Harrison is a tremendous prospect. Obviously, the name carries a lot of weight for him, who his father is. And he's also very good. He's huge. He's a great route runner. He's very athletic. He's very strong. But he disappears at times. Like if you go through his game tape, Kyle McCord, the Ohio State quarterback last year, caught a lot of flack from Buckeyes fans saying that, he just wasn't good enough. And that's why Marvin struggled. Well, Marvin had the same numbers with McCord last year that he had with CJ Stroud the season before. He also, when he played against Rutgers with CJ Stroud, he caught 2 passes. When he played against Rutgers with Kyle McCord, he caught 3 passes. Like he has games where he just kind of isn't there. Teams take him out. You look at the Notre Dame game, who has corners who will be taken in the NFL draft. He didn't do anything in that game. Again, go to Rutgers. They've got Max Melton, who will be taken in this NFL draft. He caught a couple touchdowns late, which is huge. Don't get me wrong. That, he made winning plays in the fourth quarter when he needed them. But for 75% of that game, he was invisible. It's like, if you're Marvin Harrison and you're that good, why are you invisible against Rutgers? You should be dominating Rutgers. And that concerns me. And then with Malik Nabers, I think he's incredible. I think his speed is unmatched as far as play speed. Maybe not running the 40, maybe he's not Xavier Worthy setting combine records, but I think that when the ball is snapped on the field, I don't recall seeing many guys out there faster than Malik Nabers, but I do think he still has some rounding out to do and some learning to do. I think Rome Odunze shows up on day one and is an all-pro caliber wide receiver. I think he's going to have a very long, productive NFL career. And the comps I keep hearing about him are Larry Fitzgerald and Devontae Adams. And I think they fit because that's kind of who he reminds me of too when I watch. It's more Larry Fitzgerald than Devontae to me, but I think overall route tree, Devontae, style of play, Fitzgerald. Those are two pretty good comparisons to have for an NFL wide receiver.
I like your point. I just think it's unfair that you, in the middle of it, labeled Marvin Harrison Jr. a bust of the century. I just felt like that was unfair. I can't believe you
We're in
called
it.
him Ryan Leaf on
Yeah.
the outside. I cannot believe you said that.
He's very good. It's just my favorite thing about Marvin, which is not the best thing to say about an NFL wide receiver, but my favorite thing about Marvin is watching him run block. He is incredible at it. He's so angry and violent and powerful. It is very fun to watch. He's also an incredible receiver. I just don't think he's going to be as good as Odunze.
All right. Piggybacking off of that, my take on the receiver position in general, I don't know why we still draft them so high. And here's what I mean by that. You have to have a elite guy in some way. Like that's you
Right.
cannot divorce the Joe Burrow success story and the changing of the culture in Cincinnati. You cannot divorce Joe Burrow from T. Higgins, from Ja'Marr Chase, from even Tyler Boyd, even though Tyler Boyd is inexplicably just kind of begging teams to give him money. He's around. Tyler Boyd is good. They will probably maybe draft a skill guy early in this draft, the Bengals, and get even better. But you have to have that. But it seems to me like we're talking about three guys who are all, the floor is extremely high. I'm sure one of them will be better than the others. And certainly, you know, you talk about geography being destiny with quarterbacks. It's certainly true with wide receivers. But it just feels like there's two Ohio State guys who come into the league every single year. Pretty good. Mm-hmm. There's always, you know, a handful, you know, Big 12, whatever. It just feels like there's four really good guys who come in a year, which feels like a little bit like what happened to running backs. And yet the league, or Stephon Diggs was available for a second round pick yesterday. And it just feels like the league is still like, okay, we need this so badly. We're still going to pick these guys fourth overall, fifth overall, seventh overall. All three of these guys are going to go in the top 10. I'm interested to know when the market is going to say, you know what? One thing I've noticed is these guys can be gotten later in the draft.
I think honestly, this draft class might dictate that. Like if there's been so much hype around these three guys that, you know, they talk about maybe all going in the top 10, which I don't think has ever happened before. I think if you see that and these guys all go early and they don't go on to have incredible careers, or other guys that go in late in the first, second, third, fourth, all go on to have really good careers, you could start to see teams take that on. Cause you're right. It is like running backs in that when you talk about draft classes every year, you talk about the positions that it's strong at. Like, this is a good offensive line class. This is a bad corner class, whatever. It feels like every year it's like, this is a great wide receiver class. And it is, you know, it's the way that, you know, from when they're playing as kids in the seven on sevens,
mm-hmm. exactly on the outside, the type of athlete now that plays wide receiver has changed. It's just mm-hmm. this guys who I think this is certainly true of defensive ends as well. I think there's a bunch of 6'5" guys who, if they were born 1970, would have been bad shooting guards. And now they're like, you know what I'm going to do? Make $30 million a year playing football.
Yeah, and I think that they just keep getting better. I think offenses keep getting better, which therefore also makes the wide receiver better, because coaches do a much better job of figuring out how to get their guys open and get them in space and make them look incredible. So
correct.
I do think you are going to see a course correction at some point in the future where maybe you start seeing wide receivers not going as early. But I also think like the situation kind of dictates it, because you do see teams, they do want to pair their young quarterback with a young receiver. Sometimes that works. Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, awesome. That's worked out. But you've also seen instances where you have a young quarterback and a young receiver and you're on a young team and nobody knows how to play in the NFL. So nobody really knows how to help each other. So you have to wonder, maybe we're better off pairing him with a veteran receiver who can actually has been through the wars and can actually help educate mm-hmm. him on what he needs to be doing and what he's seeing. So I don't know. I think it's context. I think there's a whole lot of stuff that goes into it. It could just be your situation. Like, well, we're pretty good on the offensive line. We're pretty good on defense. You know, we don't have a wide receiver. Let's take one. We've got the ninth pick in the draft. So it's context dependent, but I do think you're onto something. I do think that in the coming years, you will start seeing wide receivers treated more like running backs, both in the draft and probably in contracts.
That's why Miami not getting Jeremiah Smith was fine. You can just get a receiver anywhere.
I mean,
I wasn't punching air. It's fine. I'm joking, by the way. I very badly wanted that. The number one recruit in the country almost came to Miami.
That happens all the time. The number one recruit in the country is a wide receiver. So, you know, he's he's got a stink, right? Like,
lost the black stripe earlier than anybody in the history of the program. Great. Good stuff. All right.
If Ohio State ever needed anything, it was a good wide receiver.
A good receiver from Florida.
Yeah.
And finally, a recruit from Florida. More Tom Fornelli after this. Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and up, must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537, or Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org, or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net, Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP, Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700, Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050. Or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. You have a take about older quarterbacks in this draft that I found pretty interesting. Let you have the floor, and then we can kind of riff on it.
I'll start by saying I like Jaden Daniels and I like Michael Penix's prospects.
Oh boy. We know where this one's going.
I don't know if there's enough consideration put into the fact that they're 23 or 24. Like when you watch the tape, the one thing you ask any quarterback who's played in the NFL, who's played in college, the one thing that they will cite as being very important to them is repetitions, experience, learning how to play. And I think the COVID year and the extra year of eligibility in the transfer portal has allowed guys to stick around in college and play more. So Michael Penix is a 24-year-old man literally playing against boys in a lot of instances. You know, Jaden Daniels is a 24-year-old man playing against boys. And also, let's be real, Washington, Michael Penix, he's got three NFL receivers. We've talked about Roma Dunze. I said he's the best one in the country. He's one of three receivers in that team that will be drafted this spring. LSU has got Malik Nabers. He'll probably go in the top 10. Brian Thomas, he might also go in the first round. Jaden's playing with two NFL receivers. So you look at the experience, you look at who they're playing with, and you have to try to figure out, all right, did these guys just like, are they getting better or are they tapped out? And for me, I look at Michael Penix as more of a tapped out kind of guy. I think Jaden Daniels, he took a leap forward this year. But again, he's also in his fifth year in college. If you're not taking a leap forward in your fifth year in college, you're probably never going to take a leap forward. He was also surrounded by really good talent. So I don't know. I think Jaden Daniels is the one I would rather bet on because of his athleticism and his ability to make plays happen with his legs. Whereas Michael Penix, like I've talked about Penix on Cover 3 about his superhuman ability to avoid sacks, which to me is a quarterback skill that does not get discussed enough.
No.
What I haven't talked about.
Jaden Daniels does not have that, by the way.
No, Jaden Daniels runs into traffic. It is fun to watch. It terrifies me if I'm an NFL team, though, because he's not a big guy. He's a skinny kid. And I don't want him running into an NFL linebacker because he's just, I love the spirit behind it. I hate what it could mean for him going forward. But with Penix, it's the opposite. Like, part of the reason Penix is so good at avoiding sacks is Penix seems kind of scared to get hit, and I don't blame him because he's had injuries in his career. And there are times where the way he avoids a sack is just by chucking the ball away. And it's, you know, not like the way – at times you want your quarterback to get rid of the ball when he's under pressure. I think Penix chucks the ball away too soon sometimes instead of just rolling out and keeping it going because, again – I think because of the injuries he suffered, he just does not want to take hits. It's also why I think you didn't see him take off scrambling much lately in the last couple of years at Washington compared to his time at Indiana. Like, I don't think he's lost a ton of speed. I just don't think he wants to be out there exposing himself to tacklers. So these, to me, are kind of like red flags that I don't think get discussed nearly enough when it comes to the evaluation of Penix and Daniels.
Yeah, a couple things. Number one is that we're going to be having this age question a lot. First of all, One of the pluses for Sam Darnold was how young he was coming into the NFL, and that turned out to not matter at all.
He was so young.
Joe Burrow was old, relatively speaking. Old man. Anyway, we're gonna have this because I think, and the COVID year changed so much, and that just once in a lifetime. Hopefully once in a lifetime eligibility situation. But
you know what? If they happen every 100 years, I'll be okay with living through two.
100 years from now, we'll be podcasting and we'll be doing this exact same topic with Marvin Harrison VIII, who Tom will be saying is a
just
is busting.
Doesn't have that dog in him.
Just doesn't,
I don't
just
know.
Doesn't do it. Just doesn't do it. So we're gonna get this more because I think teams are gonna figure out. Like I remember Urban Meyer saying that at Florida, he said the motto of Florida. I believe he said that the freshman red shirt is dead. And that you come here, you spend 3 years here, you win the nationals, win championships, SEC or national, and then you go to the pros. I don't know, as the sport gets older, how much that is with the portal and all of this stuff, because you can import grown men. Look at Florida State with Braden Fisk. They were just like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to get some absolute animal from Western Michigan, and he's big and he's fast, and he's just going to plug the middle of the field. And if he's going against a raw guard from Clemson who's going to the NFL, Braden Fisk is going to win that. And I think that there's going to be, we saw it, I think I saw a stat, North Carolina and the Oklahoma City Thunder had the same age in their starting five, or very similar ages in their starting five. We're going to see that a little bit, where the NFL elite prospect track and the winning in college football track may be two different things, Tom. Or maybe two different things. And it's not going to be, we got Jeremiah Smith. I think he's going to win a lot because of how in all in Ohio State is, obviously, this year. But, like, I don't know how much, like, all these guys who are early entrants now, like, there's guys who are 16, 17 years old going into college because they're trying to maximize the NFL. They're rated as five stars. And it's like, well, wait a second. You're going to take 2 years to develop? Well, Guess what Mike Norvell is doing? Guess what Ryan Day is doing? He's bringing in guys who can win right now. And so the age question is going to become more and more important. I think Daryl Morey talked about this to Sloan a couple of years ago, called the Joey Dorsey problem, which no one remembers Joey Dorsey. I believe he took him in the second round with the Rockets, and he was 25 years old. Is he good or is he 25?
It's like you mentioned Joe Burrow, who was older age-wise, but Burrow, he only started two seasons, really, like at LSU. He transferred, he started the 1 year, he started his second year, blew up, goes to the NFL. Jaden Daniels and Michael Penix have been playing for 5 years. Like, they've got, like, 55 starts under their belt already. Like, that's the other thing, too. It's like, experience matters, and it's not a bad thing to have experience, but it will be interesting to see, like, the way college football is changing overall, and we could go for an hour on that. I won't really get into it. It's just, it is becoming more, I think if you're an NFL team, you love what you're hearing about the changes that college is making, because I do think with NIL and everything, like, it is becoming more, it's always been your minor league, but now it's almost becoming a more streamlined version of the minor leagues for the NFL, in that these guys are being produced and developed in a much, I don't know, safer is probably the wrong word, but a much more bettable, kind of bankable procedure and of ways of knowing how they're going to turn out at the next level, even if you'll never really, really know.
Yeah, and the biggest thing, and I don't want to sound like a broken record, I've talked about this on the show before, the biggest thing is these guys are able to go to places that are going to showcase them. Whereas it used to be like, I think I used this analogy last week, but like Matt Cassel, if he was born in 2000, would have just transferred to Washington State, and it would have been fine, and we would have seen him. We would have gone to Stanford. Stanford quarterback Matt Cassel. All right, you have another one. It's about the edge class.
I don't think it's that good. Like, I do my mocks.
Just to be clear, he's talking about the edge class and not his take, which
take
is good.
Is brilliant.
His take is good.
I look at these edge class, like Dallas Turner and you know, Jared Verse, and I think they're good players. It's just, I don't think they're, when you look at some of the edge guys that have come out in recent years that have gone in the top 10, you're like, you're Will Anderson, you're Aiden Hutchinson. These guys to me are legit game wreckers, the Bosa brothers. Like, these are guys that you draft knowing he's going to get me 10 to 15 sacks a year. And a few years from now, I'm going to have to pay him a whole lot of money to keep him going. Then the production will decline and I'll have to find the next one. I look at the guys coming in this class as like secondary pass rushers, not guys that I'm trying to build my entire, you know, defense around. Like, I think Jared Verse will be a good NFL player. I think if he's the best pass rusher you have on your team, you're probably not going to have a great pass rush. And I could say the same thing about Dallas Turner. So when I look at the class, I have Chop Robinson from Penn State as my number one edge in the class. And the primary reason for that is Chop Robinson is not a complete prospect. Verse is better against the run. Turner is better against the run. Chop Robinson has a lot to learn if he wants to be an every down kind of three down player in the NFL. He needs to get better. He needs to get a little bit bigger. But his pass rushing ceiling, I think the athlete that he is and kind of the technique he already has, I think as a guy who gets the quarterback, Chop Robinson has the highest ceiling in this class of edge rushers. So if I'm a team that needs one, I would rather wait till late first or early second when Chop Robinson's still going to be there and get him then, than take either like a Verse or Dallas Turner early, who, again, I think they're good players. But overall, I just am not super enthusiastic about this edge class. I think there are better guys coming next year. So unless it's like an immediate need, if I'm a GM in the draft this year, I'm either waiting to the later rounds or I might just put it off till next year and hopefully I've landed somebody in free agency.
Is anybody, I just going through this, you and I together, is there anybody worth drafting in this draft? Did you just punt?
At edge or just anywhere?
No, just anybody. We hate that we're over.
Caleb
I guess
Williams
Roma
is the
Dunze.
only player.
Caleb Williams,
Caleb Williams,
Roma
Roma
Dunze.
Dunze, Johnny Newton, Joe Alt.
Joe Alt. Did you see Mike Francesa said that the Jets should be shot? The Jets front office should be shot if they pass on Joe Alt?
No, but he's right. He's definitely right. The Jets should
He was
definitely
like,
trade up to
it
get
was,
Joe Alt.
I love Mike Francesa. The take was actually really funny because it was very, I love like 90s style sports radio. And I just love, cause it just doesn't really appear anywhere. And so he was like, you know what, Joe Alt, immediate 10-year starter, maybe 14-year starter. First of all, what's the difference between a 10-year and 14-year starter? I feel
Four
like that's
years.
just 4 years. But also like, I don't know. Like, remember Robert Gallery was supposed to be a 10-year, like, write it in pen. You've solved your problem for 10 years. It's like, no, you have these injuries, there's scheme stuff, there's cap stuff. Like, Jake Long was supposed to be 10-year guy, you know? Okay, that didn't really happen. And so it's, I love that. I love New York sports radio to me, even though Mike Francis is a podcast. There's something about it that's so charming. Like, I moved to the suburbs a year and a half ago. And we're going to like Home Depot, and I was like, let me just throw on a little talk radio. So this is October 2022, and they were the Yankees were playing the Guardians that night in the playoffs, I think. And talk radio, I think it was The Fan, maybe it was ESPN Radio, but whatever show I put on, they were doing 30 minutes on whether or not the Yankees have enough experience to be clutch tonight. And I was like, I haven't heard this in 20 years. I'm sitting around doing podcasts with all my dorky friends and all my best friends. And I'm sitting here and I'm just like, man, you know what I would love? A little like, are they clutch enough? Mm-hmm. That's all I want to hear. I don't know. Are they clutch enough? Let's do 30 minutes. Let's take Jake on a car phone. Jake, what's up, man?
And he doesn't deserve the pinstripes, Mike.
I don't know if you know, Juan Soto has earned his pinstripes, by the way.
Yeah, it took him like, what, a week? Yeah.
Very short time. Very short time.
You have to pay for those pinstripes in the near future.
They are. I need a vet. I heard a story about Juan Soto being so into Monument Park last year that suggested that he wanted to be a Yankee forever. This was when he was on the Padres. I heard the story when he was in the Padres. I need to vet it. But I think I think he's a real, and everybody says this, that it's a boyhood team. Like, I think he's just a massive Yankee fan. I think it's like if I could play for the Orlando Magic, I would.
Mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of players who are just kind of massive Yankee fans who play baseball, because I think the Yankees are just, you know, they're the Yankees for better or for worse.
What's that supposed to mean?
Just saying, like, I have a friend who's one of my best friends who I've never had on my podcast, but he is a Yankees fan. And I kind of like to annoy him by mentioning how the Yankees are kind of like the Nebraska Cornhuskers of baseball, in that they haven't won anything in a very long time, but we still pretend they're important. And this is the year that they're going to get things back in order.
The difference is they have legitimately really good players, and that they actually, but also it would be like if they never, I'm trying to think, it wouldn't be like if they never fired Scott Frost, because Scott Frost never brought them success as Brian Cashman has in the past. It's more like if they never fired Frank Solich, and Frank Solich was doing these sort of things.
Mm-hmm. So, is Juan Soto the Yankees' Dylan Raiola? I don't know. We'll find out.
Maybe. All right, Brock Bowers. So I'm getting a lot of whiplash on Brock Bowers. Where are you on this right now? Take clash is what I mean by that. My personal evaluation of Brock Bowers has not changed particularly much. Go ahead.
We might have to like do that thing that they do on like 60 Minutes where the witness is, you know, like in the shadow and they do the voice changer, because if college football Twitter hears what I'm about to say, I might be in some trouble. Brock Bowers is a great college football player, and he was a great college football player at Georgia. I'm not sure if he's a tight end, and he's going to be drafted at tight end, but you look at what tight ends are asked to do in the NFL. Brock Bowers isn't that to me. Brock Bowers is a slot receiver with an odd body shape, because when you watch Georgia's offense, they, first of all, they run the ball a lot, and they use their tight ends in the run game. They run a whole lot of split zone where they put the tight end in the sniffer role where he's coming across to get that backside defensive end. And Brock Bowers was asked to do that a lot, and he's not terrible at it, but man, I wouldn't qualify him as good. And it's not an effort question. I just think that he got kind of beat up a lot. And like late last year, he was dealing with injuries and you could excuse some of it, but I don't have the numbers in front of me. I looked him up and I don't think it's a coincidence. In the game Brock Bowers missed, Georgia's run game was a lot better than it was in the games Brock Bowers played, because they would put in his spot this kid named Oscar Delp, which is, for you NFL draft nerds, there's a name to keep an eye on for next year, because I think he is more of the complete tight end. They were able to run the ball better. And I think Brock Bowers is going to be fine as a receiver, but at the same time, like, I think he's great after the catch, but I don't know if he's athletic enough to where I look at him going into the NFL and I'm going to say, oh, he's going to have that same kind of success as a receiver. Because, yeah, he's a matchup problem. Like, he's too big for small corners and he's too fast for most linebackers, but he's not like a freak athlete, at least not from what I see when I watch him. So I think he was a great college player. My expectations for him at the next level are a bit more muted compared to many. I'd like to know where you stand on this.
So I'm closer to the mainstream consensus on Brock Bowers. I think that you can teach him to become more of an NFL tight end. I've seen the George Kittle comparison, which I think is off because George Kittle loved blocking.
Yes.
George Kittle loves blocking and is good at it. And he was like famously smiling when he was blocking. And like, that was the thing. The thing is, he went to Iowa. And so they were like, if you don't, and I believe, I'm not mistaken, disgraced strength coach Chris Doyle is the one who told him this. He basically went up to him and said, if you don't run block, you're never going to play at the University of Iowa. Which, by the way, tells you some things about the University of Iowa.
But Georgia's not that different.
That's what, okay. But then why did Brock Bowers play there?
Because Stetson Bennett loved throwing the ball over the middle. And I think that's for, no, I, again, it's not the effort. He gives you effort, which I think is, to your point, you can teach him. He seems willing to learn. I just don't know if it's in there. I feel like if he's going to become the blocker you need him to be, you're going to take away from the stuff that makes him interesting as a receiver. So I don't know. It's just a very interesting thing for me to watch. I would certainly, I won't blame any team that takes a shot on him, because I do think that if it hits, he's going to be a very good player. And especially now with the hip drop tackling rules, I think Brock Bowers can become even more dangerous as far as an offensive weapon for you. But I don't know. I'm just not really ready to rely on him as a run blocker just yet. I feel like he's got a lot of seasoning left there.
Fine. If I'm the Bengals, I put that card in with one second into the clock and I don't look back and say, here we go. Vamos.
But if you do that, if you're the Bengals, isn't he just kind of filling Tyler Boyd's role? He's just being a slot receiver.
Yeah,
he's
that
not really
sounds
being
great.
A tight end.
That sounds great.
But that's the thing. Like, he's a slot receiver in a tight end body.
No, he can do a little more than that. I promise you, Tom, he's a better blocker than Tyler Boyd.
Oh, for sure. I'm just saying, it's like, I don't know if I want him blocking an NFL defensive end, though.
I think it's not about teaching, because it's about body type and physicality. But I think that stuff can be managed.
We'll see. But I'm telling you, Oscar Delp, the guy who's replacing Brock Bowers.
No, yeah, the hot take is that Oscar Delp is your TE1 for 2026.
He very easily could be, yes.
I just checked him. His Wikipedia page says he chose Georgia over Miami, but I think that's fake. They throw Miami into every recruiting story because they're just like, I think it just seems better. Like, I don't remember Oscar Delp. Maybe I was asleep at the wheel, but I don't remember Oscar Delp. All right. You have a Fashanu take, which surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, I Fashanu last year, if he'd have come out, I think he might have been a top 10 pick.
Yeah.
And because I thought last year's tackle class was good. I don't think it was as good as this year's class. This year, there was a whole lot of hype about Fashanu last year because everybody thought he was going to come out. He ended up staying for another year. And I thought that was good because as talented as he was, he still had work to do, I thought, to round out his game. The problem is he had that extra year. And he is a tremendous pass blocker. He is an incredible athlete. He has great feet. He has great recovery balance. He's able to move. He's able to do all this stuff. He is an awful run blocker. Just, he bends over at the waist. He reaches. He grabs. He gets beat. He doesn't really get a lot of push. And I was hoping that when he came back for another year at Penn State, he was going to improve. But he didn't. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's kind of a red flag. And now I know if you're drafting him as your left tackle and he is an incredible pass blocker, you're probably going to be happy with that because that is his going to be his primary role. But I would still rather have somebody who can do both. I mean, I'm always shooting for the Trent Williams, not just the guy who's a specialist at one thing. So I have concerns about Fashanu from that aspect, whereas I don't know if he's ever going to be, develop into a good enough run blocker to truly be the kind of tackle you'd want to take and use in the first round or use an early first round pick. And I think when you compare him to the rest of this class, like, I think there are a lot of those guys around. Like I mentioned Joe Alt. I think Joe Alt's going to play 25 years, Kevin. I think Mike Francesco
35 years.
Shortchanging him. I just, Olu is somebody I loved. And then as I've studied this class more and more, I find myself moving him down my board further and further at the tackle position every single week, just because there are other guys in this class I like a lot more. And I don't think a year ago I would have ever even dreamed of saying that because I thought he was going to, you know, get better, but he just hasn't.
So I have a source. We're talking mid-year actually about Jared Verse, and they were saying no trench guy who's a first-round pick should ever come back. Just don't do it. Just jump, because there's a lot of reasons for it. Physicality, over-analysis. Like if the NFL deems you to be a top, well, I don't know, 20 pick and you're in the trenches, just go. Like there's no reason. You don't need many more refining. The NFL can teach. You're not getting like superior teaching in college. So just go. Otherwise, Tom Fornelli's going to say you're not a top 10 pick.
He's not. Come at me, Penn State fans. It was funny. Penn State fans all year when I was hyping up guys like Alt over Fashanu, they'd be like, oh, yeah. They'd show me as like his PFF pass blocking grade. Kevin, for some reason, they never wanted to show me his run blocking grade.
If you're doing, I have all the respect in the world for Pro Football Focus. And I think that their tallying stats, pressures allowed, pressure to sack ratio, stuff like that, hugely important. I really do see it as value. When we get to grades and we're doing like season long grade, yes, or like his grade against South Carolina, I'm sorry.
It's hit or miss.
I would not use that in an argument. I'll leave it at that. I would not use that in a particular argument. What I would use is he allowed, I'm making this up, 6 pressures. And he didn't allow 6 pressures in a game all of last year. That's the stuff that's valuable on PFF for me. Grades, yeah, not my thing. So if anybody's running to Tom Fornelli with PFF grade trash talk, do not abort.
I could just show him clips of him bending over at the waist and reaching for guys as they're getting by him in the run game and be like, yeah, well, what about this?
All right, Tom, we did it. We were finally recorded this episode.
The internet lasted the entire time.
Your internet. My internet's been cooking this whole time.
Wow, you just throw me under the bus like that.
I owe you a pod appearance or a YouTube appearance. Oh, come on. Every time you try to get me on your YouTube show at Cover 3 last year, I was tending to a child. Mm-hmm. And now I'm a deadbeat dad, so I'm totally open to whatever.
I'm happy that you finally, you know, saw the light and said, "Ah, this
I get over the hump
to raise himself." Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's fine. He's driving. I gave him the keys to the car. He's driving around right now. I told him to be a little later than I thought. So yeah, he's great.
Good, good. But thank you for having me. And I look forward to having you on our show one day. And you can just, you one and day. Bud can argue about Miami and Florida State for an hour, and the rest of us will just sit back and watch.
No, Bud takes the other side. Bud will argue for Miami to manage expectations. I'll just we'll end up doing, because I've always said I'm actually the opposite of a homer, where I have so much respect for like Jalen Ramsey. I have so much respect for him because I'm watching that game 2013, right? And I'm just like, Lord have mercy. Like help me. I was like, the entire team was Haley Van Lith, right? And I'm just sitting there and I'm just like, help me. And then I have such a respect for that. We couldn't do anything about it. It's the same way I feel about the guys who give the U down, where I'm just like, it's not my job. It's not his job to stop giving the U down. It's his job to give the U down. Pittsburgh was doing it to us all over the place. It's like, if we can't do that, if we can't do something to the Pittsburgh guys, then we deserve a U down. I just have undying respect for people who clown us.
Well, see, that's the thing. Your favorite thing about college football is hating everybody. You love to hate.
And I do it, except my best friends, many of whom did go to Florida State. All right. Yeah. Bud Elliott, not one of my best friends, but he is in my extended universe.
Yeah.
At FSU? Yeah. No, it's not. It's a good time to lose the episode. All right, see you, buddy.
Later.